So one of the topics here is to covering gratuitous evil. And the problem is exacerbated when we consider horrendous instances of evil that many would regard as gratuitous. Note that the distinction between horrendous and gratuitous evil should be made here. Horrendous evil is evil that is undeniably heinous, but not pointless. So big things, torture of puppies and, you know, someone being, you know, a serial killer murdered in weird games. So that would be horrendous. So, you know, sick for the idea of being sick, ideal. But gratuitous evil is any evil, usually horrendous evil, that seems kind of pointless, having no apparently good reason for existing. You have to remember back to his definition a couple chapters ago of a good theodicy would have that tying of good to evil that outweighs that evil and all points of evil, not just some, but every single evil that's out there has to be tied back into some good in order for it to be a good theodicy.
Yeah, and so, you know, the issue here then is that a gratuitous evil is pointless, right? And obviously he's going to argue that those kinds of evils don't happen. That's right. What God is dealing with, right? and so what's the answer to gratuitous evil, right? In other words, how do we know the particular evil has a purpose, right? Especially if there's no one-to-one correlation right. that we can look at. And he says, well, you know, can such apparently gratuitous evil ever justify any good that God would seek to achieve? It would seem, he tells us, utterly presumptuous to speak in the affirmative with 1 ounce of confidence. Furthermore, fishing for a tidy answer, he says, is pastorally disastrous right. when seeking to comfort the afflicted. Silence is often the better part of wisdom, right? So we don't say, well, yeah, all of this tragedy happens in your life, you know, but, you know, it's for a greater good, yeah. but we don't know what it is, right? yeah. Thanks a lot, Pastor.
Yeah. Right. right.
So that's what he's getting right. at here. Right?
Again, like a death of a child, you can imagine that scenario coming in. Why did God take my 2-year-old at that age, did nothing wrong. I didn't, you know, I've been a good person. I haven't stolen anything. You know, I have all these things flash forward. And then you have that pastor on the other end saying, well, all things, you know, are good for you. There's a reason for it.
Yeah. It works
it's
together.
It's almost like
good.
A platitude.
It works together for good. Really? So my death of my child, what good is that?
Right. Why, right. You know? But if you don't have an answer, I mean, what do you point to other than, well, maybe this will happen as a result of it, and you're just kind of speculating that. So what lesson can we learn from things like the Nazi death camps?
Yeah, is good going to come out of that?
right. Some would say none. Right. It is impertinent to even ask the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is an important response to the charge that the greater good defense cannot escape gratuitous evil. It is known as skeptical theism defense, which he doesn't really like that term, but he says it's an unfortunate designation. Mm. It should be called sensibly humble theism, as the following will make clear. The sensibly humble skeptical theist says that we do not know enough, thus the skepticism, to make definitive pronouncements about the goods that God may have in permitting particular evils, especially those that are horrendous. Hmm. So why did God allow the Nazi death camps? Christian, come on, I need an answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know that there are purposes. And so the skeptical renders his standing within the character of God and the pronouncements in the Bible and trusts them and says, there's no way of me knowing to present to you like, oh, well, it saved, you know, 800 million people by doing that. I don't know that. So I'm going to be skeptical of providing you a sufficient answer with it.
Right, right. I'm going to be skeptical about even knowing a sufficient answer. Right? Right. He says we may be undeniably uncertain what goods a particular evil might produce, but we can rest assured in the opposite position. Can we rest assured that it's not going to produce any good, right? He says, being severely limited in our knowledge and wisdom, we can say that absolutely No goods can be justified by the evils that might produce them. Can we really say that? Right? He's questioning, can we really say that?
So there's there's two sides of the equation there is what he's saying. He's saying on one side, you know, you look at the Holocaust and you say, you can't tell me that a good can come out of this. And on the opposite side, it says, you can't tell me no good can come out
exactly,
of this.
Exactly, right? So how can we question that? Do we know enough to question that? And then, of course, the answer is no, we don't, right? The critic, he says, has to prove a universal negative, right? That there's no reason that would justify God in permitting whatever difficult case of evil we wish to dredge up from a pit of horrors. So that's what the critic would have to say. Well, it's gratuitous. There's no reason for it. Well, how do you know that? Right? He says to embrace this claim is at least equally presumptuous.
Right.
One would have to pretend to know the furthest recesses, he tells us, of the infinite mind of God.
Right.
There can't be any good for this. Well, how can you know that? Right. Mm-hmm. How can you know that? That's the counter he's suggesting here to this particular gratuitous. So the claim is that the greater good defense allows for gratuitous evil, and he's saying, no, it doesn't, right? Well, how do we know that? We don't, we can't know that there'll be gratuitous evil. How do we know there won't be any good that comes out of it? That's what he's trying to tell us here, right?
And when you start getting into apologetics, you know, one of the questions that you deal with is the atheist saying there's no possibility that God exists. And so the common response has to do with tea in China. So the response is, well, that's like saying that there's absolutely no tea in China. Well, what would require you a sufficient knowledge of having that truth claim? Well, you'd have to have complete knowledge of everything in and underneath China in order to say there is no tea in China. So can we say that for the existence of God? Do I have ultimate knowledge of all things to say there's no possibility? And so that's kind of the response
kind of
here.
Thing he's saying. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, that this is one of the reasons why in court cases for murders or anything like that, people always want the why response. And prosecutors are really hesitant to give an accurate reason of why. They might have theories, and it does help the case at times if they can really cement the facts of the case. But when you're trying to convict somebody of doing something, the motive aspect is a nice thing, but it's not needed. It's not required within the court of law. So that's kind of what we're getting at here is, well, we can speculate that, you know, he was cheating on his wife, or he wanted it for the insurance money. That might all have been the case, but it might have just been one bad day for them. The one argument that threw him over the ledge. And if we hang our hat on this being the explanation, some evidence might come along that overturns it.
Yeah.
And
now
so then
we
it throws do, yeah. everything into question. Yeah. Well, if they were wrong about this, were they wrong about, you know, his bloody handprint on the knife, something like that.